Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Football fans tend to get attached to their teams, even if their teams are not exactly local. SDPB's Steve Zwemke is a lifelong Atlanta Falcons fan. Former SDPB intern Travis Berg cheers for the New England Patriots. Together, they join us today for a mostly friendly preview of Super Bowl 51. Travis Berg, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hi, and here's Steve Zwemke. Steve?
Hey, thank you, Lori. You know, to begin this, Travis called me at 9 o'clock last night, and he was supposed to be in studio with us here at USF, and Travis said, well, I can't make it into the studio. So, Travis, if that's any indication of how this whole thing is going to go this weekend.
You know, I knew it was going to turn around to be that way. I knew you were going to turn that around to me. That's how the New England Patriots fans always feel like. Everyone turns it around on us. So,
oh yeah, you guys are so poor.
I want to find out before we have the pity party for the poor New England Patriots.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I expected this. Yeah.
Travis, what is it about this team that makes you want to sort of cheer for them again and again after all the abuse they take publicly as well?
Yeah, they do take a lot of abuse, and sometimes it's hard to want to stick with them, but it's just there's something about the organization from top to bottom. You know, I wasn't always a New England fan. You know, they didn't catch my eye, and I'll admit it. I was in seventh grade. I was 12 years old. I was a bandwagoner when they beat the Rams, and I really didn't become a super fan until when I was in college, and I had nothing else to do on Sundays, and I kept following them, and there was just something about, you know, Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. Just they always had this want to be the best at what they do. And then it just started to trickle down, and then things like the Patriot Way started coming out. And I know that annoys a lot of people when you hear the Patriot Way, but there's just something about that where from top to bottom in the organization, everybody wants to just do their job and do it to the best of their ability. And it's something that just kind of, you know, it motivates you outside of sports eventually. Yeah. So
they can overcome anything, it seems, as an organization with leadership.
Absolutely.
And cheating.
Yeah.
No, stop. Not yet,
okay,
you.
Okay,
not yet.
Okay.
Alleged.
That organization leadership of Bill Belichick and that partnership really does stand out for that team over the years.
Absolutely. And it's amazing how, you know, you look around the league and some of the coaches you think to have a control over, you know, you usually see like the college coaches. They're able to control their players. You know, they're able to set curfews. They're able to set, you know, this is where you got to be. You know, and, you know, Bill Belichick's dealing with, you know, grown men outside of school, and he's got to have kind of his thumb over him. But it's a level of accountability where no one else that, you know, when from the outside looking in, no one else thinks that they're bigger than the organization. It's a collective aspiration to be the best that they want to be. So that's pretty much why I got on their bandwagon. So
all right, Steve Zwemke made it through that whole passionate response without rolling his eyes once. So let's talk about the Falcons, Steve. Why are they your team?
In the early 70s, I was an Atlanta Braves fan because of Hank Aaron. Mm. And when I started collecting football cards in the early 70s, it just seemed like a natural thing to become an Atlanta Falcons fan, since I was also already an Atlanta fan when it came to baseball. And I remember one of my first favorite players being the General Bob Lee. Minnesota Vikings fans will appreciate that, even though I don't think he had a very good career with Minnesota. But, you know, I've been with the team for, I don't know, 40-some years, and it's been a pretty rough and rocky road over. They've been in existence for 51 years, and they've only won 5 division championships. Yeah. They've only been to 1 Super Bowl, and they've never won a Super Bowl. So I guess that's dedication.
Yeah, right. So what's this season been like for you, Steve?
Excellent. Yeah. Really, they had a couple of games that they lost because of maybe a bad coaching decision in overtime. There was another. They had a couple of games against San Diego and Kansas City they could very well have won. That would have put them as the number one seed ahead of Dallas.
Right.
But they finished the season 11-5. They've beaten Seattle. They've beaten Green Bay in the playoffs quite handily. And I guess we're down to be the man, you've got to beat the man. And this is truly, in my opinion, the two best teams that it's come down to on Sunday.
Travis, the Patriots always have that target on their back, and everybody wants to bring them down. What are you watching for on Sunday's game? What makes you happy as a fan?
What makes me happy is the experience. You know, like Steve was saying there's a couple games where there's some coaching decisions and things didn't go their way. That's the thing about the Patriots is the moment hasn't gotten too big for them yet. You know, they don't make mistakes and they take care of the ball. And it's not just like mistakes as in interceptions or fumbles. It's key mistakes like, you know, you're on the Falcons side of the 50-yard line, but you have an illegal procedure and you're backed up 15 yards. You know, most teams, you just call that dead. You know, we're going to punt. We're basically going to go 3-and-out. They don't make those mistakes. They are able to, you know, it's the Super Bowl. It's the biggest moment in the NFL right now. They're able to overcome that, and they're able to play their game. So that's the nice thing going into this is there's experience. You know, you've got a head coach that, you know, he thinks things through. You know, look at the last Super Bowl. He could have called a timeout at the very end there when, you know, the Seahawks should have ran the ball in with Marshall Lynch, but he read the other sideline and said, no, they didn't. I got a good feeling. I'm not going to call a timeout here. There's things like that. There's just little intricacies into the game that this team knows how to handle.
I always wanted to, my dad used to say he just wanted it to be a good game. He wanted it to be competitive. Patriots fans don't necessarily want it to be a good game. They want to dominate.
Likewise.
is it the same for Atlanta Falcons team? Do you want them to just blow the Patriots out of the water? Like a good competitive game?
Oh, I'd be happy with that. But, I mean, as a person that watches the Super Bowl every year, yes, you want it to be a good game, and most years it's not. I mean, we've had some good ones in recent years, but there have been a lot of bad Super Bowl games. So, yeah, it'd be great if we blew them out, but I'll take a good game as long as we win.
What do you want from your team, the Falcons, Steve?
Travis makes a really good point. I really think this will be a close game. It could be a game where offense matches offense, and if there's a turnover somewhere in there, that could very well be the deciding factor. I like what Atlanta has coming into the game. I mean, they have the best offense in the league. They set a record this year for 13 different receivers catching a touchdown pass. That's a new NFL record. Dan Quinn, their coach, was the defensive coordinator for the Seattle Seahawks when they won the Super Bowl recently. And not only that, as bad as Atlanta's defense can be or was in the regular season, over the last probably four games or so, they've really come together. It's, for the most part, kind of a no-name defense. Vic Beasley is a recognizable guy because he led the NFL in sacks this year. But it's mostly a young group, and they kind of remind me a little bit of the Pittsburgh Pirates of 1979 because they've got the whole brotherhood. They have a theme, rise up, brotherhood, and it takes me back to the days of the family, the Pittsburgh Pirates of 1979. So it's a family that they have in that locker room. They're young, but they're together right now, and this is the time to strike.
Now, Steve, the national anthem is being sung by the Schuyler Sisters, so this is what I'm saying. I'm tuning in for from the hit musical Hamilton with the theme of Rise Up. So I think that bodes well for the Atlanta Falcons. You get Rise Up at the beginning, and it ties right in with what your team is trying to do.
That's true. It's a neutral site because the game's at Houston, and I would say that might... I don't think that benefits anybody, actually. Houston Stadium is more in line with Atlanta Stadium. It's a domed, you know, field, and it's a similar atmosphere. New England plays a lot of games, you know, in cold temperatures toward the end of the season at their home stadium. But it's neutral.
They did do well against the Panthers, though, in Houston, in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So we'll take that.
you're talking about past, though. This is 2017, my friend.
Travis, we have to talk about how your team overcomes Deflategate and goes into the Super Bowl with that hanging over their head. Steve brought it up, but I think it's worth talking about. How do they go into this game and deal with that history?
You know, I don't. I think that's kind of just behind them.
Yeah, it's already been dealt with.
You know,
with,
the really. Whole. It, it's. You know, it was 2 years ago when the Patriots won the Super Bowl. They started the season 0-2, and everybody wanted to ask, you know, is Tom Brady going to be considering benching him? And Belichick said, you know, we're on to Cincinnati. That was the only thing he had to answer. And I think they put that behind them. And if anything, it gave them more fuel for the fire. You know, you watch like Mark Wahlberg or Ben Affleck, those guys have talked about Deflategate before, and then, you know, they just have this big ramp-up speech that says, if anything, you just, you know, you made Tom Brady even more mad, so now he's going to be even more determined to win. So I think, you know, he's got a little bit more motivation, a little more, you know, stick it to Roger Goodell on his shoulders. So I think they're using it as a tool for good here. So,
all right. Have you placed a bet between the two of you?
No,
not yet.
Yeah,
we'll find some wings or a beverage somewhere, I suppose.
All right, predictions. Yeah. Let's do that. Travis, you start. What are your predictions for the game?
Oh man, I can see it going kind of one of two ways. I could see it being a close game and the Patriots winning, or that hot offense of Atlanta just comes and blows out the Patriots. But you know, I think that's a fairy tale when it comes down to it. I would probably say somewhere along the lines of 31-27 Patriots.
All right. Steve,
that's pretty close to what I have. I could see Atlanta coming out strong in the beginning and then New England bearing down and probably taking the lead, and Atlanta winning the game 31-30 on a Matt Bryant field goal at the end of the game.
Ah, we're going to watch for that. All right. Any final thoughts?
As far as I'm concerned, if Atlanta wins this one, this isn't just for the 2017 team. This is for all the guys over the past 51 years, guys like Steve Bartkowski, Alfred Jenkins, Tommy Nobis, Mike Ken, Deion Sanders, Dave Hampton. I mean, guys that came close in the last 51 years. I think this is for them as well if Atlanta takes it.
We're going to give Steve Zwemke the last word because he showed up at the studio and Travis Berg just called in. Thanks, Travis. I appreciate it.
Thank you
good
very
luck.
Much. Go
good
pass.
Luck, buddy.
All right, thanks, Steve. Have a good weekend. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Hundreds of high school theater students have gathered in Aberdeen for the state one-act play competition. Many of them sang show tunes on the bus ride all the way across South Dakota. SDPB's Nate Weck joins us to talk about the energy on the stage, behind the scenes, and in the judging booth. Nate, welcome to In the Moment.
Hi, Lori. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. What's it like out there in Aberdeen?
Well, you know, I'm actually just pulling into the city. Our very own Brian Gavick right now, he's been covering the event all through yesterday and up to today so far. It started yesterday morning around 9 o'clock, and it's actually going to conclude tomorrow somewhere in that 5 o'clock realm, and that's when the awards photos and things like that will take place. There's 44 different performances over the three-day period. Each group is given 45 minutes to get on the stage, do their performance, and get off the stage. And if you multiply it all together, I'm not a math major or anything like that, so I had to actually use my calculator to figure it out, but that's 33 hours worth of theater performances between Thursday morning to Saturday early evening. So there's a lot of action going on right now in Aberdeen at the Johnson Event Hall.
Wow, and I've been on Facebook on the SDPB sports page, and there's really incredible photos of. Are you taking photos? Is the SDPB crew taking photos of every performance?
Yeah, that's the goal, Lori. Our goal is to try to showcase each of those groups. So it does take you know, a lot of dedication and time, you know, on our parts to make sure that we are getting those photos, especially when some of the acts, you know, might have just one set on stage, and some of them might have maybe three or four different sets that they're pushing on the stage. So it's kind of our goal to try to showcase all of what goes on within the performance so that, if you're unable to attend, you can kind of see those photos still and kind of get a little bit of an idea as to what did take place during those individual performances.
Nate, tell me about this 45-minute time frame. Is it what happens if they go over?
Well, if they go over, there are penalties for that, and then that's something that Brooks Bowman with the High School Activity Association and the judges, there's certain policies in place and stuff like that, and scores can be docked if it's serious enough, things like that. Basically, the groups that are performing, they're basically aiming for that superior rating at this competition. So you got your superior performance, superior play, and then superior ensemble. Those are the three categories that you could potentially reach a superior rating in at this event. And you know, and it's really interesting because as soon as one play gets done, the curtain goes down. You really wonder all of the commotion that's going on behind that curtain, because there's one group's trying to get all of their stuff off the stage in that time frame. You got another group as soon as that 45-minute clock ends. Another group is immediately starting to push their stuff onto the stage because their clock starts as soon as the prior group's clock ends. So it's a very fast-paced event. And if you've ever been to the event before, it's very fun. There's so many different themes that different schools go with. You'll have some plays that'll be really powerful. There might be a soldier coming home from war type of thing. You might have, you know, a Shakespeare style play that's a little bit more traditional. You might have some that are a little bit more humorous and things like that. So I mean, you really get a very wide variety of what kind of plays you'll be watching if you are at the state one act play, or if you've been to any of the one act regionals and stuff like that throughout the state this spring.
Nate, do you have any idea where the judges sit? Are they close up to the stage? Are they far back? Do the actors get to see where the judges are and monitor their facial expressions?
You know, that's a good question. In years past, the last couple of years, it's been at Sioux Falls O'Gorman. Mm-hmm. And the first year when I was at Sioux Falls O'Gorman for it, there was one judge sitting back there that had a stopwatch, and his job was mostly just to start the stopwatch when the curtain went up, and then they would compare times with the judge that is more so behind the scenes. And then after they get done with their performance, they actually go into a judge's room where the judges will kind of critique them in both a positive way and some constructive criticism and stuff like that too. So it's very similar to kind of like what music contest is. If anybody's ever been to music contest, where you have the opportunity after you've performed, where the judges will write notes and you have the opportunity to read those notes, things like that. And the judges are always very great because they're always going to give you something to work on, but they always give you as well things that they really enjoy, things that they really liked, and the reasoning for why they give the certain score. So they really do a good job of relaying the information that they have to the performers and to the instructors.
That's fascinating. Nate Weck is in Aberdeen with the SDPB crew. You can find photos of all the actors and performances online. Head over to South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Facebook page. The sports Facebook page is where you'll find these photos. You can also follow Nate on Twitter at NateSDPB. Nate Weck, thanks for being with us today. Have fun.
Thanks. Thanks, Lori. Take care.
Every artist leaves a legacy. South Dakota artist Vic Runnels died Sunday at the age of 81. He was known for his work with Native American art projects in schools. SDPB's China Lockett has more.
Vic Runnels grew up on the Pine Ridge Reservation and focused on Native American art throughout his career. Roger Brower is a South Dakota artist who worked with Runnels.
We knew each other for many, many years. First of all, we're related. And I guess we probably got to know each other the best when we used to be part of a group called Dreamcatchers, a group of a number of painters. Vic kind of organized the thing, and he felt that they were probably the top Lakota artists at that time. It was Don Rulo and Don Montalo was part of it, sort of. Arthur Amiot, Bobby Penn, Richard Red Owl and myself, and Vic, of course. And, you know, we had quite an interesting group. We were just a little bit ahead of our time is what happened.
You know? Brower says the group of painters strategized marketing and got together to discuss Lakota art. He says they felt they were onto something important.
This is back in the late 70s, early 80s when this came about, and really there hadn't been a lot of attention paid to Native art in general, but Lakota art in particular, and we felt that there was an absolute need in the world for people to understand that what we had to say as artists and as artisans was important for the rest of the world to know.
Runnels was a charter member of the Dreamcatchers Guild. This group met regularly for nearly 7 years. Brower says he and Runnels often spoke about starting the Dreamcatchers Guild up again.
We did a couple shows here and there, you know, down in California, and we got involved in different shows, you know, like the Northern Plains Tribal Arts Show in Sioux Falls, and it was really interesting because whenever there was a show, it seemed like it was the Dreamcatchers that won all the prize money.
Brower says they had hoped to set an example for young artists to pursue their dreams and not become disheartened. He says Reynolds moved to Hill City in the early 80s.
And started a gallery called Ishnalawicha, which means the only man.
The gallery was full of Native American art and only opened for a short time, but Brower says it left a mark.
Dick was very responsible for kind of demysticizing the whole idea of what Native art is and what it's about, and that Native artists are just like anybody else. And I think it had a huge impact on how not just Hill City, but the whole area was viewing Lakota art at that time.
Brower says Reynolds was always working on a project and planning something new. Don Becker is also a South Dakota artist. He says he met Reynolds in the early 70s and followed his different projects.
Architecture and sculpture and painting, you know, he covered a pretty wide variety of things. You know, and education too, you know, even though he had no background in education.
Becker says Reynolds focused on art education, primarily for children.
He was always involved as an artist in the schools quite a bit. I know he would have gigs, I'd call them, you know, at this school and that school to have workshops for the students. You know, usually they were BIA schools or tribal schools.
Becker says for the time that he knew Runnels, he worked independently. He says the artist was good at freelancing his skills.
I always admired him because it seemed like he could get by on very, very little, you know, with the occasional sale or trade of artwork for what he needed. He was good at that.
He says Runnels was one of a kind and seemed to remain optimistic no matter what.
Well, he was a good friend to a lot of people. You know, he was always generous, always giving his artwork away. You know, last time I saw him, he gave me several pieces of his artwork. And he was still optimistic, even though he knew that he faced an uncertain future.
He is survived by his wife of 60 years and his 7 children. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm China Lockett in Rapid City.
And thanks to China Lockett for that piece. Let's look ahead now to the weekend with highlights from the SDPB Arts Calendar. Steve Zwemke joins us with that. Steve?
Thanks, Lori. Author and photographer Paul Horsted presents talks about his upcoming book, National Parks, Yesterday and Today, tomorrow morning at the Tri-State Museum in Belle Fourche. His presentation begins at 10:30 with a brunch at 10. The 10:30 presentation is free to attend. Enjoy an old-time barn dance with live music and calling by French Creek Folk tomorrow night from 7 to 9 at the Custer YMCA Log Building. Donations go to the Custer YMCA. And the third annual Dolly Disco at the Vermilion National Guard Armory benefits the Imagination Library tomorrow night from 6 to 8. Skates are provided. It's $5 per person and $15 per family. For more information on these events and many others, log on to sdpb.org/calendar.
Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. For this week's Moment in Sound, we're broadcasting live from the University of Sioux Falls studios here. With me in the studio, Meriwether Rain Delay has set up. How are you?
I'm well.
And welcome. He's got a self-titled album. It was released last spring. I spent the morning with it. It's wonderful. Highly recommend. Gives a taste of alt country, folk, and alternative music. At least that's the description.
Yeah.
There. I don't know. Is that a fair description?
I think it's pretty accurate, yeah.
Yeah?
You know?
So, you play guitar, you play piano?
A little bit, yes.
Tell me about your musical background.
Well, I'm all just self-taught. The main goal was to always just be able to write little songs, you know? So the instruments came from that.
Really? Self-taught? Yeah. On guitar and piano?
Yeah. Piano's more recent. I've just been teaching myself by songs that are already written on guitar and trying to transcribe them to the piano. And then from there, I've been writing more on the piano and organ.
And organ.
Yes, I like the organs.
And what do you like about the organ?
They're haunting. They're very haunting.
Huh. So give me an idea of what, like, you just give yourself that kind of permission to play and explore. And a lot of musicians and artists don't do that, and maybe you even learn in school that you can't do that.
Yeah, I think that it comes from I know as when I was younger, my mom would always sing little tunes around the song, kind of like, I consider it like note taking or jotting on the side of a page when you're note taking. And so I've always just had little jingles or whatever in my head.
Yeah.
And once I picked up the guitar, it was just, I need to write these little songs, and pop music is what I guess comes out as.
So how old?
About 14.
14.
Yeah.
This sort of comes as part of who you are.
Yeah.
And what did it provide you at the age of 14?
I'm
a mother
like
of
angst.
A teenager, so like I'm making that connection there.
Well, that was faster music. I was into punk when I was a kid. So aggression, angst. That's what came out then.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of anger, I guess.
And how has that sort of changed then?
I'm pretty chill now.
Yeah.
I think it still comes from the same place and attitude, but I don't know, there's a sadness definitely to it that I think came from when I was a kid, but I'm still looking to identify that place, but explore it, you know? And then just the storytelling.
I would have said storytelling and melancholy.
Yeah.
After listening to the album, I would say there's a melancholy to it.
There's comfort in that.
Yeah, exactly. So play something for us. What do you want to play first?
I'll play something that isn't on the tape. It's a newer one.
All right.
I thought I could die for you. Candy bars never tasted so sweet. I thought I could die for you. Honey, you must lie, 'cause you're too neat. And I thought I was a million bucks, drowning was our ongoing. I thought I was a million bucks, and a million more couldn't buy your love complete. Leave it up to me to let you down. Sha-na-na-na, leave it up to you to drag me through. For your enjoyment,
feel like a fat snowman. I love your pipes and your warm sweater. And I am just a daisy chain hanging on by a teeny tiny stem. I am just a daisy chain tied too tightly but still brightly shining. Leave it up to me, you let you down. Sha-na-na-na, leave it up to you to drag me through.
If you're just tuning in, Moment in Sound this Friday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Our guest is Meriwether Rain Delay, singer, songwriter, musician. Sioux Falls, is that where you're from?
Sioux Falls.
Right here in Sioux Falls. What's it like to play a song that you've written for somebody for the first time?
Well, a lot of them I find is they're for me. You know, playing in front of people has become terrifying. It's terrifying. It's a newer thing. You know, I've been playing and writing these songs for myself and for just very few people have heard them. Only in the last year or so have I been taking them out and about. A little bit here and there when I would get bursts of courage, I would play open mics or something like that. I would get like this need to show it to like a bigger, something bigger, but until Total Drag, being introduced to Total Drag, I wasn't playing out and about. It was they seem like mantras for me. I play them at home a lot. Like on lunch break, I'll go home and I'll pick up the guitar and run through a song or whatever. So they seem like they're for me lot of times.
What kind of response have you gotten from audiences?
I've gotten good response. Yeah.
And how
people seem to like it.
Does that feed into what you want to do in the future?
Yeah, I like that. But I mean, if I wasn't playing for them for people, I would still be writing and playing for myself.
I love that.
Yeah. I would like more people to hear them at this point. If I like that idea of it, and I'm putting together another album and trying to push forward.
You know? I predict that a lot of people will. So how do you feel when you're done? You know, playing at Total Drag or somewhere like that. What is that? Is that exhausting for you then, or is it energizing?
It can depend. It's definitely exhausting. Just being around people can be exhausting. But I'm energized by the fact that I'm doing something, proving to myself, I'm overcoming things that I at first thought that I never would. And so each little time seems like a victory, which is personally I like.
Yeah. Where do the words come from? Then you're very much a writer, too, I can tell.
Yeah, they come from I feel like I can just tap in. Sometimes I can just tap into something, a lot of times from a little melody, something that I hear. I can switch the words around, or they come from the air.
Yeah, yeah. Play something else for us. What's next?
I'll do Forgive Forgotten. It's a little one.
Come, son, and don't you pursuit of love. Just shine your energy on all of life. Judgment is made, but that ain't who you are. You might as well identify as the clouds. So forgive the forgotten, 'cause they don't exist. They only live like ghosts inside my head. Taking time for granted is what I do best. Always thinking you got it bad, don't you, kid?
If you're just tuning in, our guest is Meriwether Rain Delay. You're listening to South Dakota Public Broadcasting. It's Friday, so we're here with Moment in Sound, and Meriwether is a singer, songwriter, musician from Sioux Falls, self-titled album. So you can find Meriwether Rain Delay's CD album. Where do you find that?
It was released on cassette through Total Drag.
Cassette?
Yes, and then came with a download code, so cassette. And then you can find it on iTunes, Bandcamp, and all the other
platforms.
Why
cassette?
Cassette, well, you know, just like vinyl, they're having a resurgence, you know. And you can put them in your pocket, carry them around. There's cool artwork, you can collect them. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's the cheap to press, a lot cheaper than vinyl to press, so that's a big plus. And you can get them out there. And now with having a download code, I guess that just kind of changes it all up.
Yeah. You know what I like about cassette is you can't skip forward easily.
Yeah.
So you're listening to the artist's intent through the whole thing.
Right.
Similar to vinyl, but even vinyl you can kind of get on and off easily.
Yeah.
But cassette, you know, you got to put some effort into, you know, skipping something. So you sit through the whole narrative, I think, that what the artist is trying to say.
Very true.
Tell me about the scene in Sioux Falls right now as a musician who's just sort of getting started sharing your work with audiences.
It's exploding. I think not only the music scene, but just Sioux Falls as a city is kind of finding an identity and expressing itself in all sorts of ways. There's just things going on all the time. And I mean, downtown Sioux Falls kind of having an identity, and people are starting to see that. I don't know if it's like a modesty thing, that we don't think that what comes from here can be the best, but I think people are starting to see that local things can be just as good as whatever else is out there.
Yeah. Who have you been playing with?
Or,
you know, in the same set I don't know, I guess it's a two-part question. Are you collaborating with people, or are you just playing
to.
Before?
Yeah, I'm starting to.
Let's talk about the collaboration first.
The collaboration, I've been playing with, I've done a lot with the guys from Androgynous Squash and Angie Hosh.
Okay.
Lindy helped put that whole, all the artwork on the tape together, and the guys in the Tinderbox, who I'm playing with, February 11th with Red Leaves at Icon, they did the mastering. They do stuff with the White Wall, so they mastered the album.
Okay.
And I've been playing some music with those guys. They're really talented and a tight group. And so, you know, Burlap, I know he has a new album coming out. I just played with him, and he's great.
Yeah.
The whole scene, everyone is accepting. I mean, that's how I feel like you can find growth, is when everyone's just working together to find a higher consciousness or whatever it is.
Yeah. So influences then, are you know, people like Burlap, Wolf King influencing you as a musician, as a performer?
I'm finding out a lot about live performance, you know. I love seeing the band. There's a band called The Lemons. They're younger guys, just the getting the performance on this aggression and having this space like Total Drag is something that curates all these things, is where people can run through and be comfortable and get practice. You know, it's something that I never had but always wanted, was someplace where you can go in a safe place. You know,
right. How about influences that aren't local?
Well, I feel like a lot of them aren't really music. I try not to draw from a lot of musical instruments. I try to avoid,
yeah,
because it can be so easy, especially for what I'm doing is so simple. But of course, you know, Towns Van Zandt was a really big one. Mm-hmm. His record Live at the Old Quarter, especially, it's just him and his guitar, and it's very powerful. And
literature.
Yeah, a little, you know, poetry.
Yeah. I was going to guess you were going to go there. So yeah. There's some poetic. Who are your favorite poets?
I wouldn't really want to.
Okay, we're going to let them be just
yeah,
sort of there.
We'll let that, yeah, you know, I try to just draw from the world around me and maybe just the everyday to day, pick up on a phrase. And so I leave it at that.
Yeah. Let's hear another song.
Okay.
What's this one going to be? Merryweather Rain Delay, if you're just tuning in.
It's one of my favorites off the tape. It's called Oh Sweet Anne Marie.
You are away from a place that's innately good. Oh, your kindness ain't afraid of no rainy day parade. Your intelligence runs through. Keep talking all about it. Oh me, oh my, how lucky am I to have you in my life. Oh, sweet Anne Marie. Oh, sweet.
Just tuning in. Our guest is Merryweather Rain Delay, singer, songwriter, musician from Sioux Falls. You're listening to Moment in Sound on Fridays in the Moment, South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We've talked about the sort of melodic simplicity and lyrical honesty and performance vulnerability, and some people work for a long time to try to achieve that. You have it at the beginning of your career in public. Jump ahead a little bit and tell me, is that something that you can preserve into the future? Do you think about that at all?
Yeah, I do. I think about it's funny because I just feel like my wheels were always spinning, so I just have a lot of content, a lot of bigger ideas, and that I now see myself executing those things, and just through having a community of people, that those things can start to come to life, and it's beautiful.
Do you surprise yourself?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, yeah, I do. Yeah.
So, this creative process, then, how do you? You mentioned a lunch break.
Yeah.
And I want to talk for a minute to those other artists or musicians or poets who are trying to figure out how to make creativity part of their daily life. And it's worth it for you.
Oh, definitely. A lot of times it can be frustrating. Even it doesn't seem like it's creative. It almost is like a necessity for my mental health or clarity, you know, it just kind of sets me right. That's why but I think it's important just to know that we all have something in us. I have a voice. I want to use it, I guess, you know.
Right.
It's fun just to sing. You know, people sing in the car. It's just taking it a little further. I always took it very serious, so I guess it always, that was the thing, is I thought it was going somewhere.
Are you having fun?
I'm having fun, though, yeah.
Right.
Lots of fun.
Right. Our guest is Meriwether Raindelay. You can see him with Red Leaves, Tinderbox, Meriwether Raindelay, Russ Stedman are all playing at the Icon Saturday, February 11th at 8 p.m. Tickets at the door, $8. Is that all? That right? February 11th at the Icon, so you can come see the full show there. Do you think you might have something here in just a minute? I'll give you a minute to think about maybe playing this out of the show.
Okay.
And I just want to say that In the Moment is produced by Steve Zwemke and Chris Lawfrey. Our executive producer is Kara Hetland. Assistance today provided by Nate Weck, China Lockett, and Steve Munson. And we're going to say so long, but Meriwether Raindelay, you can find the self-titled album on cassette.
Bandcamp.
Total Drag, Sioux Falls,
yeah,
Bandcamp,
yeah,
iTunes.
Everywhere.
And we got about a minute left, so we're going to let Meriwether Raindelay play us out. Thanks for being here.
Sweetest selves, we're blue.